yeah, if it's a head-to-head between plain M&Ms and plain Skittles, I'm going plain Skittles every single time. If you start getting variants, you know, like peanut butter M&Ms, I'll probably stick with those over the Skittles.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or like, but then again, if you give me sour Skittles versus peanut M&Ms, depending on my mood, I might go sour Skittles. So it really does depend. How about yourself?
I'm going M&Ms, I think, just because the peanut butter kind. Also, the peanut kind, they're really good hiking
snack. Peanut kind are good. Yes, the peanut kind are really good.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know.
But yeah. They are. There's some kind of magic, especially if you've been in the wilderness for a little bit. Man, they've just got...
The other one that we get sometimes when we go hiking are the yogurt-covered raisins. You ever had those?
I haven't had those in a really long time.
They're good.
That's a good idea, man. Yeah.
They got to be mixed in with salty stuff, but they're good.
What would you say your go-to hiking snacks are? Sounds like yogurt raisins.
Yeah, I mean, like on a short trip, it's going to be something like just some trail mix with those yogurt raisins in them. If you go to the King Supers grocery store here, there's like, you can bring a bag, and then they have like these, I don't know how you say it, like these things where you can just like pull down the lever and all this shit comes out. 10 different kinds of trail mix there. So you can just go in and be like, all right, I want this and this and this and this roll out. It's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love trail mix so much. I try to ban it or buy small containers as possible. Fucking lawnmower. So like my neighbor has a riding lawnmower and I'm like, dude, I've seen your property. It's not even as big as mine on the rental. There's no need for you to have this like golf course sized lawnmower. And he cuts the neighbor's just grass sometimes. I think it's what he's doing right now, but I try to buy the small amount of trail mix because I eat so much trail mix it just makes my stomach hurt.
That's the beauty of the King Supers. It's by the pound, so you just like get an amount, whatever amount you want. That's what you get. Then you just go weigh your stuff. And
I think I need that. It might help me with my portion controls.
We always buy beef jerky, too. We never end up eating it because it's just like, whatever. I'm never in the mood for it when I'm out there hiking. I want something sweet.
Yeah, man, with beef jerky, it's also like, it's a workout to eat. It's not like easy. Yeah, like while you're just cooking along, it's hard to...
I'm liable to trip eating some beef jerky and trying to hike at the same time, man. Trip or choke.
Yeah, it's a hazard, man. Because it's also just like dries you out and you're like... I'm going to choke to death out here in the middle of the wilderness.
So, where does this begin? Colors of candy.
Yes. I'm going to peek out the window and see.
Holler at him.
Yeah, what's going on with.
We can wait it out, dude. I don't care.
All right, I think that dude's done.
Cool. How funny would it be? It would suck, but how funny would it be if my neighbor fired up their motor right now?
Whoa, whoa, amber is the color of our energy. Ooh. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 16. I'm Joey.
I'm Jay.
And we are now part of the 16s. Jay, for people just now catching up on us, what's the purpose of this podcast?
We are going through my entire record collection, a few albums at a time, and we're going to listen to the whole thing in 2021. So, spent a lot of time indoors in 2020. We decided, let's spend more time indoors listening to records in 2021. So, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, what else do we have going on in life? Nothing. It's all literally meaningless. Nothing. All right, and today's episode specifically, we keep finding ideas. What's today's idea?
We're talking about some very colorful albums this week. Albums in which either the band, the name of the album, has a color in the title.
Yeah, this was pretty good. Like, there are a lot more than I realized, and there were some that were left off that we'll find a home for later, but we're absolutely going to hear my Appalachian accent today, because I cannot say C-O-L-O-R. I don't say it normally. I say collar.
Who cares? It's not normal. I don't even know how to say it. Color?
I think I say it. I think that's the way it's supposed to.
Doesn't make me better than you.
I think that's the proper gentleman's way. So,
do you have a favorite color?
I do. Someone once said it was a cop out, but I really like gray. How about you?
I'm a green guy. I like gray too, but I'm a green fella. I like really nice dark greens.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a fun tone, even though it just makes me want to be outside all the time. I like a lot of colors,
actually. I mean, I'm yeah. digging colors, yeah. Yeah, me too.
I really like certain oranges, for sure. Certain greens I really like a lot as well.
So let's kick it off here with blue, which is probably one of my top... I mean, that's a top three color. Come on.
Yeah.
And we're going to be talking about Blue Cheer. We're going to be talking about their second album, Outside Inside. This was released in August of 1968 on Philip Records. Joey, do you know anything about Blue Cheer?
I had never heard of this band.
So I'm not super familiar with them. I was somewhat. I had heard their cover of Summertime Blues before. Mm. I saw this album and it's supposedly... actually, one of the same reason I own the Camel albums. I was reading an article one time about prog bands from way back that I might not know about. Camel was listed, and so was Blue Cheer. So once I saw this in a record store in Lincoln, Nebraska, I had to buy it. It was expensive. It was $15, but it's the original pressing of Blue Cheer's second album. So upon first listen, what'd you have to say about it?
Man, this was fucking something else, wasn't it?
It was wild. Let's start with the album title itself, Outside Inside. Do you know why they called it that?
I have no idea.
Here's why. They like to record at such a high volume that parts of this album had to be recorded outside.
Oh my God.
So, yeah, so...
Was it, like, just in a backyard or in a parking lot?
There, it's got a list in here of where they did the outside sessions. Let me talk to you about this album, too. It's a tri-fold, but it folds out really weird. It opens like a book, and then one of the folds then folds up. So it's, like, super weird. I'm gonna rip it if I keep messing with it. So the outside recordings were done. Gate 5, Sausalito, California. I don't know where that is. Muir Beach. So they did it on the beach, apparently.
Jesus.
Pier 57 in New York.
So they coast to coast.
Right. Yeah. Really weird. The indoor sessions were done in New York and then also in California area. So two different locations. So pretty wild.
That, do you know which tracks were recorded in which locales?
I don't. It does not tell me on the inside the record, so I don't know where they were done.
I think if I re-listen knowing that now, I would be able to pick it out, because some stuff to figure it out, is yeah. Some stuff sounds like it was recorded on a beach, and I don't mean this in a bad way at all, because it's really enjoy this,
dude. That's the whole thing. I mean, I think it's supposed to be like that. It is really, really muddy. It just sounds like it's mud. Yeah.
I mean, I love the fact that loud is the perfect way to put it.
Super loud.
This had to have freaked the hell out of people. This had to have been nightmarish.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. And it's cool, too, because, you know, if you're talking about Blue Cheer as a band, you know, when I got into looking at this, like I said, I didn't know much about Blue Cheer or anything. But if you look at them and you read about them, some of the things people say is it's kind of like really, really early, like stoner rock, heavy metal, acid rock, hard rock kind of stuff, because this is pretty early on, 1960, mm-hmm. What did I say, 8?
Yeah, 68.
You know, so this is talking Black Sabbath time period. So it's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Like I said, the volume that they're recording this at, and it's wild.
Yeah, and this is their second album.
Yeah, so I've never heard their first. Apparently, this one's a little bit more listener-friendly as opposed to the first one, apparently. From what I've read, I don't know. But diving in here, so do you have any standout tracks on side A for you?
I mean, I really liked pretty much everything on this. I had a great time, yeah.
Track one is Feathers from Your Tree. It's kind of funny, too, because the first bullet point I have says it doesn't sound good. It sounds like mud.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, wait, hold on a second. I get it. That's kind of how it is. It's psychedelic, weird-ass rock. Then jumping into the second track, Sun Cycle, really cool. Cool bluesy thing. And they've got the, I noticed this a lot on this album, the bass is super, super woolly. Like, you can't even, like, distinguish individual notes sometimes because it's just so loud and, like, fuzzed out.
Yeah, that's one where I kind of wonder which outdoor venue that was recorded in. To me, it's interesting that that publication called this prog, because to me, it's very proto-metal with a hardcore hippie tinge to it. I wonder if any remaster versions exist, and if so, like, what would be lost in that? I don't think I would want to hear it, but I am curious.
His vocals sound like they're coming through, like, a torn speaker. Like, it's just, it doesn't sound crisp and clear and clean and nice, but that's not the point. That was never the point when they set out to record this. You wouldn't record something outside if the point was for it to be perfect.
Yeah. You got anything on Just a Little Bit?
Kind of grungy, almost, standing on that one. I love that it's a three-piece. A lot of sound for three guys. The drums are really pounding away most of the time. The guitar's cool. Bass is cool. It's another one of those, like, Rush, where it's just, like, amazing how much sound can come out of three dudes.
This track goes hard.
It does. It makes me wonder, too, like, now that I've heard this, now that I've actually listened to this, you can definitely say to yourself, okay, I can see how this was influential, because it had to have been innovative at the time. I mean, really raw and weird, but definitely innovative.
I would love to see the family tree that this spawned. And
what bands claim Blue Cheer as an influence? Because I bet it's really broad and really interesting. Let's see, Gypsy Ball?
It was...
heavy.
Yeah, it was fuzzy and just gritty and majorly lo-fi. I loved it.
Yeah. In fact, one of the notes I wrote is just really damn loud. Because it was. It was just super loud. Kind of a dirty, grungier Cream.
Man, it's funny you mentioned Cream, because I've got that peppered throughout my note. One of those two influenced each other or fed off each other. Because I feel like, especially in the drumming, like, some of these songs Cream probably wishes they had written.
Like, it's way heavier blues, a lot of it. Like, way heavier, way dirtier, grungier, sludgier blues. And both Cream and them doing it. And actually, Black Sabbath, too, had some bluesy stuff. So, let's see. Come and Get It. Picked up the pace on that one. That was kind of cool. Like an early punk rock song.
I'm letting it out early. Letting it out of the bag early this week. This is my song of the week, man.
Let's go.
Hot, hot, hot damn. I was ready to thrash out. Like, this was so far ahead of its time.
Yeah.
Man, I listened to this at night in my headphones, and I was like, I'm ready to just, like, throw a brick through a window.
It is hard. And it sounded like shit. But it was awesome. Like, it's not... I don't mean that in a bad way, but it just didn't sound like... You know, it's not perfect, but that's absolutely not the point. It was such a thrasher. I'm the same way. I got up and started kicking around, throwing air punches. Side B kicks off with a surprising one to me. I can't get no satisfaction. What you think of this? So they really cranked up to 11 on the Stone Satisfaction here.
Yeah, I wasn't looking at the track listing before.
I mean, I just flipped it over and I was like, oh shit, Satisfaction. And it doesn't start out like Satisfaction. There's just a bunch of weird shit going on, and then boom, they hit you with like a sped up version of Satisfaction. Yeah.
I thought they totally put their spin on it, and it was good, man. It was a real hyperactive take.
It was. Again, kind of maybe like an early punk rock version of Satisfaction to me. And then at the end, it got really spaced out and weird. It's just kind of a super woolly bass, too. I mean, again, it's one of those that they've got the bass, the actual bass of the bass, an amp turned up so much. There's like no treble at all at coming out of the bass. 100% bass sound. And it's just all one sound at certain points, which I like. But it doesn't even sound like individual notes sometimes. It's like a wall of sound coming at you.
Yeah.
So let's see. Track 7, The Hunter. It's a cover of an Albert King blues song.
Yeah. I thought this was another solid cover that really highlights how important the blues was to metal.
Absolutely.
And a lot of that proto metal had blue, like early Black Sabbath, like, sure, they're
very bluesy. Some
heavy. Yeah. Very, very bluesy.
Let's see. Magnolia Caboose Baby Finger, track 8. Oh, what you got on that one?
Do you know where this name came from?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I should have looked, but I have no idea. Do you?
I don't. The name, it cracked me up. I don't know, it's a little fireball, but that name.
This is a wild-ass instrumental psychedelic tune, just like another wall of sound kind of track. Super loud, very fun. Got anything on the last track here, Babylon?
I just thought it was a loopy, groovy, sludgy, bluesy finisher that I give a standing ovation to.
They brought the riffs on that one. There were some good riffs. Again, has the lead singer's voice. But anyway, on this song, his voice sounds like it's coming through a ripped speaker. Just super raw, but really great. And that's the whole album. And that's my kind of final thought on the album. It doesn't sound perfect. It's super raw, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, so my final thoughts. I decided to look up this album, just see if there were any notes on or anything. One of the coolest things, and honestly most surprising, it just absolutely shocked me, was Pitchfork gave this a 9.6 out of 10. I'm close to green. I think on their scale, I'm giving it a 9 out of 10. On a regular, more common scale, I'm getting it at a 6.5 out of 7.
A normal scale. A 7-point scale, as we all are aware of. Yeah. I'm with you, dude. It was fun. It was a good purchase. Like I said, I got it. Paid a little bit of money for it. It was $14 from Lincoln Vintage Vinyl in Lincoln, Nebraska. But I think it was well worth it. It's the original pressing. It's cool. And it sounds good. Let's see. Let's move on here to an album I have no idea where it came from. I've got the debut album of the band Rainbow, which I believe at the time they may have been called Richie Blackmore's Rainbow, which is what this album is called. It is the debut album, and it was released in 1975. Joey, what do you know about Rainbow?
My man Dio was fronting them up, and hell yeah. Like, this is the Rainbow. So we've talked about Rainbow before in a much later phase. This is the Rainbow I know and like, and I am here for Dio.
Me too. So Dio is comprised of Richie Blackmore, who was in Deep Purple. And then your lead vocalist is going to be Ronnie James Dio, who was prior to this was fronting a band called Elf. So really, just getting to look at this, I mean, it really was mostly just Richie Blackmore and a lot of the guys from Elf. So you got Ronnie James Dio, Gary Driscoll is on the drums. They snagged the cellist from ELO for a couple songs. So that's kind of cool.
That's so random.
Yeah, really random. So
I wonder if that dude was like, man, I wish ELO sounded like this.
You know, it's interesting because I think about that too when there's a musician who plays in two completely different bands. Yeah. That's fun, and I bet it's interesting for them to break it up a little bit. But
I totally agree. I mean, I feel that same way. It's always weird to me whenever I see an artist have like a second project or play with another band that pretty much just sounds like their first band. And I'm like, what are you doing here? Why don't you just use that talent in the band you're already in? Yeah, that's kind
of
cool.
It's funny too, because inside there's a whole bunch of pictures of the band and everyone performing. But I was reading about the actual inside of this cover, and the pictures are from Elf performing and then from Deep Purple performing. There are no pictures in here of this lineup performing together because they never recorded together, or they never played together at this point.
Well, super kind of funny. Yeah.
Anyway, Richie Blackmore's Rainbow. Jumping in here, track one, Man on the Silver Mountain.
Dude, I thought Dio sounded fantastic, and I thought this track was burly. It was rough and ready. Just cool, heavy rock.
Yeah, it really was a showcase for Ronnie James Dio's voice. It definitely feels like Deep Purple with Ronnie James Dio singing, but that's fine. I like Deep Purple. I have no problem with it, but it definitely felt Deep Purple-y. But what a powerful voice. I mean... I don't know all of the lyrics to this song, but they seem pretty stupid and meaningless. Like, they don't really seem like much of anything. But the way he sings them, it makes it sound so grand and powerful. Like, I'm the man on the silver mountain. Yeah. Like, yeah, all right.
You are the man on the silver mountain.
You are, Ronnie. Thank you. So, anyway, I like that one quite a bit. That's probably the most famous track off of here. It's got to be. It's the only one I've ever heard on the radio. Let's see. Anything else on side A here? We got Self-Portrait.
Some nice licks on that one. I've got some stuff on Black Sheep of the Family.
Yes. That's more of a standard rocker, but hit me. What you got?
So I really like that tune. Just, you know, solid tune about individualism, doing your thing, and just living that life, man. This is a close Song of the Week pick for me.
Yeah, I really like the chorus. You know, when he's talking, I'm the black sheep of the family.
Yeah, yeah.
I was singing along by the end. I like this one a lot.
Yeah, the drums are really solid. The drums are really solid on a lot of these albums this week. Then there's that great line where it's like, just me and my dog. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. Shout out to dogs.
Anytime. Hell yeah, dogs. let's see. The last track on side A, Catch the Rainbow. They let Ronnie croon a little bit on that one.
Yeah, it's definitely a little cool down, and crooning is a good way to put it.
It was interesting to hear his voice in that context. He can make anything seem just more heroic just by singing it. So I don't know. I thought it was pretty cool to see his voice in a different context. Nice little slow heroic jam there.
It's interesting that closes side A, because I feel like it leads into Snake Charmer.
Snake Charmer!
Yeah.
Hell yeah. I like Snake Charmer.
Really, yeah.
Snake Charmer was cool, man. That's the first track on the B-side. Almost like a funk bass line going on that one. I love how he really hits the Snake Charmer. Like staccato. Bam, bam, bam. Here it is coming at you. Super funky. Cool voice. I think he's got one of the coolest rock voices. Is it the best? No, but it's really cool. I love his voice.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I keep getting distracted by this fucking weed eater.
Oh, God. Throw a rock at him. Not really. What else you got on the B-side here?
If you don't like rock and roll, like, it's fine enough. But 16th Century Greensleeves, man, that one hit me.
Let me say one thing about if you don't like rock and roll. That would be a cool one to play. I bet they play, if they played that at shows, I bet they played it in the middle of the show. Because it, you know, you've got, like, if you don't like rock and roll, well, it's too late now. Because you're already at the show, son of a bitch. I just thought that was a good one to play, like, at the middle of the show. Kind of southern rock sounding. You got some piano and some hand claps in there. I like that one. But I'm with you. 16th Century Greensleeves. That one rocks pretty hard.
Great storytelling.
Yeah.
Rhythm at a perfect speed. Yo, yeah. Yeah, this was channeling some deep, deep short story writing here.
The whole thing just felt like epic high fantasy. The whole album, really. I mean, it's really just, it's a cool album. And then they finish off with Still I'm Sad, which is super cool track. I thought this was an interesting one to end with. It's an instrumental cover of a Yardbirds track of the same name. And it was grooving super hard.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't make that Yardbirds connection. Yeah, it was a damn fine instrumental. It's not what I was expecting at all.
Interesting. I mean, Ronnie's your singer and you go out with an instrumental, but still, somebody is pounding the shit out of that cowbell on that song. And it was, the bass was grooving pretty good. I liked it. Any final thoughts on Rainbow?
Didn't love it, but I absolutely liked it a lot.
Yeah, same. Same. I gotta say, it was honestly better than I expected it to be. Especially considering the other Rainbow album we've already listened to. I know that's a totally different lineup of guys, but it was better than I expected. I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, it's the Rainbow that...
It's the good Rainbow.
Everyone should know and love. And... Yeah. Alright, I'm gonna wait a second because he's just like literally right outside the back window. All right, this turd may be in the distance for a little bit now.
Third album of the week on our colorful week. It's Blue again. Blue Oyster Cult's 8th studio album, Fire of Unknown Origin. It was released June of 1981. Joey, how familiar are you with Blue Oyster Cult?
I don't know much about Blue Oyster Cult beyond the singles. And after this, it's going to remain that way. Plus this album, but...
I didn't love it either. I have a did you know about this album, though.
Okay.
Several songs on this album were intended for the soundtrack of the animated film Heavy Metal. Have you seen Heavy Metal?
I have, and by intended, did you mean they were written and didn't make it, or...
They didn't use any of them. So,
shocking.
They used one song off of this, and it was one of the ones that was actually not written for the film, but they did use it in the film, A Veteran of the Psychic Wars. But none of the ones they actually intended to be on the film made it there.
God, can you imagine how awkward that conversation was? Like, hey, we wrote all these songs, and the director's just being like,
nope.
Oh, Well, we'll see how they fit in.
So, let's jump on in here. Title track, lead off track, Fire of Unknown Origin.
So this one, good on them. It didn't do anything for me, but it's like dance prog.
It's really groovy. It sounds like, do you remember that video game Spy Hunter where you're a car and you're driving on the highway, I guess? It's like an old Nintendo game. But there was a bass riff on Spy Hunter that this kind of reminded me of. Got a little synth going on. It's not what I expected from the band who did Godzilla, I'll tell you that. But yeah, Burning For You is solid. I always like this song. I always sing along. It's got some, you know, I'm living for giving the devil his due. I'm burning for you. I'm in. I'll sing along.
But after the first track, this was just such a clear indication that this whole album was going to be all over the musical map.
For sure. Absolutely, because they're nothing alike. Let's see, track three. This is the only one that actually made it onto the movie. Veteran of the Psychic Wars.
I mean, I can see why it was the only one that made it on there, kind of, but yeah, it wasn't clicking with me.
I kind of liked it. The drums were pretty thunderous. The synth were pretty cool. Kind of really minimal guitar. There wasn't a lot of guitar on that one. Yeah, kind of like a, I don't know, like almost like a tribal drum sound. The synth was really cool. I like that one. Kind of weird. Kind of Pink Floydian.
Yeah. Yeah, and that one definitely did fit the film. I'll tell you what, I took more kindly to the B-side.
Okay.
The A-side, that's for
Let's roll on in then.
So, like, Vengeance, the Pact. Vengeance, you know, in parentheses, the Pact.
Mm-hmm.
There's that creepy little carousel thing going on. It's more sinister, it's more foreboding, something that interests me more. But it still managed to bore me. But the ending was pretty nice.
It had some galloping metal riffs going on. I figured you might like that. I mean, it wasn't, don't take offense to this, it wasn't super far off from some of the new wave of British heavy metal stuff we listened to last week. Like, it wasn't that far off from that. I didn't think. I mean, there were some cool harmonies. It had the galloping metal riff, but I can see how you wouldn't like it. I mean, come on. The whole thing is not... It, like you said, it's all over the place.
Like, yeah, and I think that's why, like, those hooks didn't pull me. I'm like... I can feel the meaning in it, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's like it definitely when, feels
like,
hollow.
Saxon. Yeah, yeah. Like, Saxon or Judas Priest or Maiden is just, like, roaring at you with their rhythm section. And this, it's like, let's try this. Or, we have to write something for a metal soundtrack. Let's try this. It just, yeah.
I'm with you. It felt fake. Let's see. Track 7, After Dark. Any thoughts on that one? I don't really have much on that one.
This is kind of like power prog new wave thing going on here, just like this weird collision there. But I actually like this track all the way through. This was maybe the only track I can say I completely liked.
Joan Crawford, track 8. So
yeah, I want to know what you thought of this one.
It's super weird.
Cool.
Super weird. One of the weirdest songs we've listened to this week, but
I think it might be one of the weirdest songs we've listened to, period.
It's kind of cool. I mean, it had that big old piano riff with the pounding drums. The lyrics, though, Joan Crawford has risen from the grave. I don't even know who Joan Crawford is. I know she's an actress, but I couldn't pick her out of a lineup.
Yeah.
But this is a song that was written after she died. And one of the main lyrics is, Joan Crawford has risen from the grave. I liked it. I gotta say, I like this one. I this might have been one of my favorite songs on the album just because of how freaking weird it was.
It had like a Bizarro World Meatloaf vibe to it. So let me just read this verse and then the chorus for the listener. Junkies down in Brooklyn are going crazy. They're laughing just like hungry dogs in the street. Policemen are hiding behind the skirts of little girls. Their eyes have turned the color of frozen meat. And then, no, a bunch. Joan Crawford has risen from the grave. Joan Crawford has risen from the grave. I don't know. I was drawn to the absurd bizarreness of this.
I'm telling you. Might have been my second favorite track on this album after Burner For You. It was weird as hell.
You got any wrap-up thoughts?
Super weird album. Very weird. I don't know. Lots of variety. Some of it's decent. I can see that fitting it into a soundtrack would make more sense. When you look at it from that perspective, to me, it makes more sense because you're like, okay, there's a variety because they intended this to be different scenes in a movie.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong there, but it just makes more sense to me as a soundtrack than it does as this album.
Yeah, I totally get that. It did not move my needle at all, but I get where you're coming from.
Hey, everyone. Jay here.
And Joey.
We're having a lot of fun doing this, and we're grateful to everyone who's tuned in so far. As the podcast grows, we hope to keep everything as independent as possible.
Which is why we've created a Buy Me a Coffee campaign.
Buy Me a Coffee is a great way to support us for as little as $1 or $4 per month, or $40 per year. We're still coming up with bonuses and perks, but we hope you'll consider supporting us while we iron out those things.
Interested in being the oil to this machine? You can find us at buymeacoffee.com/Jay and Joey or find the link in the show notes.
Thanks everyone and enjoy the show.
Thank you all.
So let's jump right into the next one. So far I've done two blues, a rainbow. We're going to do red this time. So next one up, number four for the week, is Red Fang's self-titled debut album. It was released in 2009 on Sargent House.
Yeah, and they're both
Stoner metal.
Yeah,
that's what we got here.
I'm kind of familiar with them. I swear I've seen them open for someone at one point, but I just don't know where or when. Yeah, tell us about the album.
I've only seen them as the headliner, so I've seen other bands open for them, but I've only seen them as the headliner.
Nice.
One of my favorite album covers of all time. I think it's a perfect debut album cover for a metal band because what it is it's a giant saber-toothed tiger skull with a red eye and the band's name in badass font, and that's it. That's all that's on this cover, just a tiger, saber-toothed tiger skull and the words Red Fang. And I think
against the black background, yeah,
solid black. And I think for a debut album with just your name and something else badass on the cover is the perfect formula. Like, I think it's great.
It works well. Yeah, it's a damn good metal album cover.
I'll tell you why I own this album. I bought this album at a Red Fang show, actually. The Riot Room in Kansas City.
Is this one where you bought from someone at a urinal or something like that?
No, I've seen Red Fang at the Riot Room twice. So this was the other time I saw them there. And that's when I just bought it after the show. I went through a pretty big Red Fang phase. I still love them. I prefer some of this stuff, like from this album and the one after this album, compared to their newer stuff, but it's all pretty good. Mm-hmm. The album after this is called Murder the Mountains, and it's really, really good.
Yeah, I dug it for sure. Yeah.
So let's talk about it. Track one, Prehistoric Dog. I love it. It's got the kind of the guitar feedback intro, just like the squealing sound that happens when you just have a guitar turned up really loud next to an amp, and then it just comes screaming in. It's super fast and super fun. This is one of my favorites.
It's rad. It's tumbling. Just a solid head nodding opener. Really smacks you in the face, like as soon as the vocals kick in.
It's fun. It's just fun. This whole album is fun to me. I'm gonna say fun a lot, and I'll have to come up with some synonyms, but I mean just dogs that howl from outer space, come to earth to lay to waste, with fang and claw to shred your face. They will erase the human race. Time to kiss your ass goodbye.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know what you're getting. And you know you're going to have a blast.
They seem like cool guys, too. Like, they just seem like cool dudes. They're fun at shows. And then it's not perfect, it's raw. And I love it that about Red Fang. Like, I know one of the guitarists one time, there's two guitarists, and one of them plays a guitar with five strings on it. And I think he just, like, he broke one time or something and just never replaced it. So he just plays with five strings.
Fair enough.
And the guitar itself has, like, no paint left on it. It's missing a pickup. It's super fucked up, but he plays it and it sounds awesome. Like,
that's incredible.
They're that kind of a band.
Oh, well, just gonna roll with it.
Yeah. I mean, I sent you a music video for one of their other songs where they get a check from the record label to make an album, and basically what the video is them spending the money from the check just on stupid shit. They buy a bunch of stuff and run it over with a car, and like, it's ridiculous, but that's who they are. So anyway, anything on these next two tracks, Reverse Thunder and Night Destroyer?
Reverse Thunder, I mean, it feels like running through a gauntlet and Night Destroyer. Like, the rhythm section just swinging a battle axe around, man.
Dude, the drummer on this is absolutely phenomenal. And he's really, really good. His name is John Sherman. And he's great all throughout this, but man, he crushes that one. Night Destroyer. I have a hot sauce by that name. So this band put out a pretty okay hot sauce. I like the song a lot more than the hot sauce.
I wonder how that partnership came to be.
There's a hot sauce company. I think they're out of Texas who makes band related hot sauce. I have a Sword hot sauce from them as well. Sword.
Damn. Okay. What kind of flavors? What kind of notes? We getting some floral hints and
Night Destroyer was, I think, Tomatillo based, so it wasn't super spicy. It was pretty good. Oh, okay. It's gone. I used it all. Humans Remain, Human Remains, track 4. I have always really liked this weird ass song, and it's weird, but I have always really liked it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, speaking of heavy, this is heavy, heavy, heavy. And I love how sprawling the intro is.
Yes. And I love I don't know if it's an actual organ or if it's just the guitarist just repeatedly just plucking the same note at a super high rate of speed. But there's that one tone that just is throughout the entire song. And it never stops. And then just heavy, heavy, heaviness underneath of it. Humans remain. Humans remain. It's like, hell yeah.
Yeah, I imagine the crowd has fun with that one for sure, singing it right back to him.
What's heavier to you, a really slow monster riff or like a really fast song? Which one of those, like a shredder, which one of those is heavier to you?
I'd say whenever I go with heavy, it tends to be slower and like more doom.
And this is one of the heavy ones.
I mean, this really is just like a plow truck.
It is. Next song, Good to Die. Really fucking dark lyrically. That's the kickoff of side B. It's a little faster. It's a little bit of a ripper. What do you got on that one?
I think I got a reason. I don't think I don't try. I think I got a reason, and I'll piss in your sky.
Yes.
I think I've got a reason.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I love Red Fang, dude. Anything on sharks?
I don't have much. I just have a kind of a side note of...
Lay it on me.
I feel like this is a band where if you don't know anything about stoner metal, like you're still going to find yourself grooving and just kind of getting down, like having fun.
For sure, man. Absolutely. They are fun. Like I said, I've seen them twice in person and I would absolutely do it again because they're a blast. They put on a fun show. The crowd's always super into it. Like you said, it's the kind of music that gets you moving, even if you'd never heard of them before. It was fun. You know, the last two tracks here, I don't have many notes on them. Whales and Leeches and Witness. Any final thoughts from you? That's pretty much it. I love Red Fang and I got a kick out of it, as I always do.
I had a good time, man. And I am going to drive myself nuts until I figure out where I've seen them and who they opened for.
Let's see. Number 5 for the week. Another kind of in the same vein. This is Ultraviolet. So violet's our color there because you can't see ultraviolet light. So that would be nothing. But this album is called Ultraviolet. Is the 6th studio album by American sludge metal group Kylesa. Came out May 28th, 2013 on Season of Mist Records.
So we were talking about this a little beforehand, but man, that Georgia doom stoner sludge metal scene in the aughts and early teens freaking ruled.
Yeah, it would have been a blast. All these bands playing with each other, opening for each other, that kind of stuff. Like, I know that Kylesa opened for one of the bands we're going to talk about at another episode, for sure. I remember reading that. So, I mean... Super cool. Super cool. Anyway, diving in here. What do you got on side A of Ultraviolet?
Exhale. As soon as it hits, I was like, hell yeah, my man. Just boom. I am in the pit immediately and just loving it.
It's interesting, too, because I don't know if it does on the digital version, but on my version, on the record, when you drop the needle, there's kind of a long silence before it comes just slamming in, heavily distorted, pounding drums, super aggressive. It's primal. It's really primal.
I thought my headphones had disconnected from my computer. And
okay,
then when
so it does it on the digital.
Yeah.
All right, good.
I was like, oh, shit. I just love what the vocals are doing here.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. It's aggressive. It's really aggressive. Yeah. So I don't have anything else on XL. Cool track.
Yeah.
Track two, Unspoken. Another kind of pound one. It's Riff City. So I say this a couple times in my notes for this one, but there's almost an industrial vibe to some of the stuff.
It's got that pretty cool little intro. It's kind of Outer Limits, kind of John Carpenter.
Track four, We're Taking This, comes screaming in. It's aggressive. It's big. It's powerful.
Trippy.
Herds of sheep are crowding around. False prophets repeating sound. We play this how we want to your bullshit juggernaut. Yeah. Some more cool lyrics. Let's see. Track five, Long Gone. My first note. I hurt my neck headbanging to this, and I don't. my neck kind of sore still from listening to this.
Yeah, again, man, this is another one where the drums just freaking roll.
Track seven, beginning of side B, steady breakdown. Huge, massive drums, big old chugging riff, cool vocals, very cool vocals on that one, actually.
Yes, that's one of my key notes is just how central Laura Pleasant's vocals are to this. They sound amazing.
This was, up to this point, this was my favorite track on this album. Really, really heavy riffs. I'm a riff guy. If you can throw a really cool riff at me, I'm down.
Yeah.
Low Tide. Super chill. Nice breath of calm in the middle of a very heavy album.
Yeah, the harmonies are heavenly. Very melodic.
Oh, I like the lyrics on that one too. It's winter, it's low tide. Let's hang for a while and watch the world die. On the last day, we are all alive.
Nice. Yeah.
Track 10, Quicksand. Huge, chugging, grimy riffs. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because they also have big, soaring, airy, free-feeling parts in that one too. So it's like a real dichotomy of kind of floating, free-feeling stuff and then just heavy, heavy riffs. Any final thoughts on this one?
Not terribly. You've got one more, and I'm already looking forward to it.
Yeah, I like this one. It's really heavy. Big old drums, cool vocals, a lot of attitude, just enjoyable on the whole. Good album. Looking forward to the other Kylissa album I have, too. Final one for the week. We are going to be talking about the fifth studio album by the band Baroness. This one is Gold and Gray. It came out June 14th, 2019 on Baroness's own label, Abraxan Hymns.
Oh, this is self-released. Their own label? No, yeah. I had no idea. Nice. Good on them.
There are a lot of self-sufficient stuff. Did you know that it's an extremely cool album cover, and they all are. Mm-hmm. All Baroness albums have cool album covers. Did you know they're all painted by the lead vocalist, lead guitarist?
I did.
John Baisley.
Yeah.
Is his name. They have some extremely cool albums. And the other part that I really like about this one, actually, is I got this at a record store in Lawrence, Kansas on Mass Street, but I do not remember what the record store was called. But I must have bought the premium version of this because it's awesome. It's got a cool little booklet inside with a whole bunch of his artwork in it and the lyrics. It's got individual sleeves. It's a double album, but it's really only one and a half because there's nothing on the backside of the second disc. But just a really beautiful, cool album cover.
It is. And all of their album covers are so...
They're all cool. Yeah.
Yeah, just intricate and hyper detailed.
It's a cool band for this week, too, because they're all color themed as well. Yeah. All Baroness albums have kind of a color theme. So
yeah, because they have red, blue, yellow, and green, purple, gold, and gray. I think that's all of them.
I'm excited to put pictures of this thing up. I'll just say that. Track one, Front Toward Enemy.
I'm very curious how you would describe this, because I was...
It's tough, man. The whole album is so... It's another one that's got a wide variety, but it's unlike the Blue Oyster Cult, I like the variety on this one. It's got like an orchestral kind of quiet intro to the main riff, which is just a really gnarly guitar riff. I don't know. It's hard to describe. It's super heavy, really fast. It's in a weird time signature, I can tell you that, but I'm not good enough with time signatures to tell you what it is.
Yeah, it's kind of a slight detour from their previous sounds, but it still churns along, and it just shakes you alive, like this weird stoner power pop metal type thing. And you hear something like this, and you're like, Do they make bad music? Because I'm feeling a big old note. Like, they just, everything they have tried works out some way or another. They're so freaking talented.
It's really cool, too, because one thing I did like about this album, like I said, it's a double album. It's an hour long. Mm-hmm. In between most of the songs, there's a little instrumental. And they're all different, yeah, and they're all interesting. And, you know, the one after this is called I'm Already Gone. Just a cool little drum bass thing. And then we get into track three, Seasons. Any thoughts on Seasons? The rhythm section on Seasons was really, really cool. The drum and the bass were really going hard for a lot of it.
You've mentioned it before, but there's just some really cool trials with different sounds and techniques. Like on the previous track, that was the instrumental, like the bells that are sprinkled into that. Mm-hmm. And like with this, there's that tempo change around a minute 50 where I'm just like, shit, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of different tempo changes throughout the whole album.
Yeah.
They're changing tempos a lot, but we rise, or we fall, we rise, we bend, we break, we burn, but we survive.
Yeah, dude, like
some cool lyrics on this album.
You mentioned it, the drums on this are just phenomenal. And I'll tell you what, man, like, when is John Baisley going to get the respect he deserves as a vocalist? Because it's unreal.
We'll talk about it later on the album, but he's got it's kind of a versatile voice. There is some slower stuff in this that he does. Yeah. It's really pretty and really interesting. Yeah. Then we're jumping into track five here, Tourniquet. This is the first album with Gina Gleason on it, by the way. I don't know if you knew that or not. This is their first one with her on it. The previous guitarist left the band and she joined them. Do you know where she came from? That's kind of an interesting origin story. She was a guitarist with Cirque du Soleil.
Really?
She was in the cast, yeah. So that's where they got her. And she's
How did those two worlds collide?
I know. It's cool.
Maybe they were working on a Baroness Cirque du Soleil.
So anyway, I like the when it hits you with I've Got an Artificial Heart. It's a cool song. Yeah. Really pretty song.
Absolutely.
I like when a song rocks really hard, but by the same time you can call it pretty. And that's what that one is. A lot of them. That was probably, I'm going to call Tourniquet Jay's Song of the Week. So, Row Me an Anchor.
This is another one of those just heavy tracks where you're in the Thunderdome. So much about this album is just big and... Mm-hmm. The title of this album is so perfect to me because there are many, many massive, glistening, beautiful moments, like you said, and some real heaviness as well. And they just balance each other out in these worlds so well.
I like how that one starts out. Just some super fast drumstick clicks. He's just like, all right, I'm going to set the tempo. Here it is. And then they just come just screaming in. Like you said, it sounds huge. And the bass and drums are just crushing again. Let's see. Track eight, I'd Do Anything.
I'd do anything just to hold you. Yeah, a nice little Simple Plan cover.
That's not what it was. It's piano and some vocals and then some acoustic. That was the one I was like, okay, you know, John Baisley's voice is really, really cool in this. It's kind of sparse compared to a lot of the other track nine, Blankets of Ash, kind of just continues where the previous song ended. But oh my God, that is so deep. The bass on that is so deep. I think I wrecked one of my speakers almost.
They just use these instrumentals so well to change the mood.
For and sure.
To adjust the pace. It's brilliant.
It is. It's really good. I loved all the little short instrumentals. And they're all like a minute, minute and a half long. Some of them are less than a minute. And you're right. They kind of tie everything together so, so well. That was the one that I really said. I enjoy this album a lot. And I enjoy it as an album a lot more than I would if I just put on one of the songs. And it's because of these little instrumental connector things. You know, I like listening to this as an album as opposed to just putting on Tourniquet and listening to it. It's better in the context with everything else that's going on. So
100%. Yeah. You got anything on the last two?
Pale Sun, I loved.
Very solid psychedelic closer.
Yeah. Really groovy bass line. Cool drums. They're just going absolutely bonkers on that one. Cool harmonies again with John and Gina. I just love the bass groove on that one. And really cool vocals on the outro too.
Yeah,
it's kind of it was a cappella for a minute. It was just John just screaming at you for a second in a very beautiful way, but he was definitely screaming at you. Just a cool way to go out.
Absolutely. And what are your final thoughts?
it was my favorite album of the week. Really cool. A lot of variety. I love all the different little instrumental sections, like we said. Just, it was a good one to go out on. It was a good one to end the week with.
I totally agree. This was neck and neck with Blue Cheer for me. I mean, they're so different, such different time periods, but they're supposed to release a new album this year, so we'll see. But supposedly, this was their last collar-themed album.
Really? I'm disappointed by that, but I guess you gotta move on at some point. I've got a really cool Baroness t-shirt I'm going to have to bust out. I don't even know where it is, but it's badass. It's got a big purple hand on it, and in the palm of the hand is some teeth, like a mouth.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. I love that. Every time I wear that shirt in public, people are like, oh, man, sick shirt. It is cool.
Honey, stay away from that guy.
Stay away from that guy.
Yeah, like,
it's funny, dude. When you wear metal shirts in public, it's amazing, actually. Like, you can tell who the other metalheads are, because they'll nod. Like, hey, what's up, man? I was wearing a Mastodon shirt in Yellowstone Park one time. Some guy comes up to me, oh, dude, Mastodon, that's so gnarly. Are you going up to the mud pots? I was like, yeah, we're going up to the mud pots, brother. Anyway. What do you got? Question of the week. What do you got?
So these colors made me think of Roy G. Biv, which of course makes me think of rainbows, which makes me think of Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Let's say you're on the way to see the wizard. What are you asking the wizard for?
Make me sing like Ronnie James Dio.
Oh, man.
That's what I would say.
Give me with those pipes. Whiz.
The pipes. Okay. Whiz. I don't know. He can't really grant anything anyway. If you've seen, sorry, spoiler alert on a movie that's 80 years old, but the wizard's not really a wizard, man. He doesn't have any powers. But if he could give me the confidence to sing like the great Ronnie James Dio, I'm in.
Exactly, man. That's what I was getting at. Maybe it's inside you already and you just haven't flexed it yet.
I kind of doubt it. You've heard me try to sing on this thing, so.
Dude. The Tin Man thought he didn't have the heart, and then all of a sudden he's got that.
Tell
heart.
You what, man, being from Kansas, and that freaking movie, dude, you go anywhere in the continental United States, and you tell them you are from the state of Kansas, 9 times out of 10 you're gonna get you're not in Kansas anymore, Toto, or something like that. It's so annoying. There's other stuff in Kansas, people. Not all of it's good, but we have other stuff. I promise you, we got other shit there.
I kind of intentionally went this route because I knew how you felt.
I mean, we got other stuff. There's a big aircraft industry. We've got, all right. Anyway, Roy G. Biv is one of my favorite acronyms. I don't know why, but I love it. And I will never forget it. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. Roy G. Biv. That's how you remember the colors of the rainbow, kids. So I do think it's kind of weird that I have a favorite acronym, but Joey, do you have a favorite acronym? What is it? And if not, do you have any acronyms you have created yourself to remember things? And what are those?
I've definitely never created acronyms. Like, I know some people who learn that way, and that just confuses me even more. Yeah, what am I supposed to be remembering? But I'll tell you what my favorite might be, because I just think it's so hilarious, and just there's just something that cracks me up about it, but CAPTCHA.
I didn't even know that was an acronym.
Yeah, it's something like computerized. I'll look it up. It's like computer. Shit. It's like computer. Completely. Okay, here it is. Completely automated public Turing test to tell computers and humans apart. There's just this system designed so that they can tell the robots apart from the human. Like, that's how closer we are to getting to the singularity, is they had to design these tests.
What's the test on Blade Runner that they're asking the guy, like, about a turtle crossing the desert? Like, it sounds like kind of that same at the very beginning of the first Blade Runner.
Oh my god, yeah, maybe that was the first CAPTCHA.
It's a cool scene. I think my favorite acronym is SCUBA. Self-contained underwater breathing apparatus. Always have gotten a kick out of that. We're getting off the color path here, my friend, but
I
think it's a good discussion. We're learning a lot. We're teaching, we're learning.
Yeah. Sorry, I got distracted trying to find other acronyms. TCBY, the country's best yogurt. Now there's a good acronym. Hell yeah. I love my soft serve, my Froyo.
That's bold. I don't know if I believe it.
It's a strong claim. I'll tell you what drives me nuts, and this is completely off topic, but how, like, every piece of legislation now that gets passed has to have some kind of acronym associated with it. It's like, we can't pass meaningful legislation unless it comes with an acronym. I mean, everything from, like...
We can't pass meaningful legislation anyway, but
period.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, oh, here's something that's going to help farmers. We better call it, like, the Hee-Haw Act or something. It's drives me nutty.
If I can calm down, guys, get something done.
Yeah, spend too much time trying to get cutesy.
Coming up with freaking stupid shit instead of passing things.
Okay. Yeah. Think this episode was pure gold. Love our blue-collar approach to talking about music. Well, please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, tell others about us. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at JayandJoeyPod. We have a Buy Me a Coffee. You can find those things in our Spotify playlist through the link tree in the show notes. There's a hyperlink that takes you right to where our Spotify playlists are through on a link tree. And as always, be good to each other.